From WXXI News in Rochester, this is Connections. I'm Scott Feibusch, in for Evan Dawson all week, and this hour we are talking about the summer that is coming up. We'll have a couple of topics this summer. Later in the hour, we will hear about the Rochester Streetlight Festival, a first-time event that takes place beginning tomorrow night. But for the first part of the hour, we are talking about summer programs for your kids, what's available out there. Summer Learning Day is coming up, how you can keep them educated and engaged and ready for school again in the fall and maybe out of your hair a little bit over the course of the summer as well. Joining us here in the studio this hour, Condor Gable is the CEO of the Greater Rochester Summer Learning Association. Welcome.
Thank you, Scott.
We have Jennifer Muniga is the Executive Director of Cameron Community Ministries. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes, you did.
I did. Excellent. And Dwayne Mahoney is the Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Club of Rochester.
Hi, Scott.
Thanks, everybody, for being with us. We are excited to take your phone calls as well. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. And on Twitter, I am at Scott Feibusch, and we're happy to take your questions that way as well. Let's start with Summer Learning Day, which is coming up. Describe what's coming up later this week.
Well, let me jump in, Scott. Summer Learning Day has been going on for a number of years. It's organized by the National Summer Learning Association. And if you go to that website of Summer Learning Association, you'll find an interactive map that shows locations all around the country where folks are engaged in all kinds of interesting summer learning activities. This Saturday, actually, we're going to have our first, hopefully annual, Rock Run for Summer Learning, which will be at the MCC campus. And if folks are interested, they can go to www.rockrun.org.
And the larger website for all this information is?
I think it's right here. Summer Learning, there's a long one here, but you can get to it if you go to www.summerlearning.org.
Summerlearning.org,
and it'll then direct you to this interactive site.
Let's talk about some of the challenges that are out there, both Dwayne and Jennifer. You know, it's easy enough for me to say as a suburban parent, gee, there's plenty for my kids to do this summer. I can send them off to camp. I can send them to a museum for a program. What are some of the challenges that face people who don't have those resources immediately at hand?
Well, in the communities we serve, for the most part, you know, parents still need to go to work, it's twofold. It's one is the cost of a quality program sometimes can be not necessarily something that they can afford. And then also it's a timing issue as well. Some parents have, you know, expressed that they may need to be at work at 7:30 or 8 o'clock and the program doesn't start till 9. So now the school's out, you know, those particular issues come about. And then, you know, they also don't want the program to necessarily be a program where there's not any summer learning that's going to help them against the regression that kids sometimes have during the summer.
Right. I think another barrier is also the access to these programs and learning what they are, what the availability is. They have to really count on sometimes TV, radio stations such as these, the school district to really promote things because they don't necessarily have, the internet and things that they're finding out about these programs through.
Which is part of why we're talking about it today.
Absolutely.
We want to welcome you into the conversation as well. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. If you have concerns about finding programs for your kids this summer, if you have options that you can think of that are available out there, please let us know on Twitter at Scott Feibusch. Let's talk about some of these options that are out there. What sorts of things do you make available that make it possible for somebody who's got to leave at 7:30 at work to have something worthwhile for their kids to do during the summer?
Well, I know that there are a lot of services that do have wraparound, and I know that Conger can talk about that a little bit as well, but timing-wise, it's a little bit difficult. We at Cameron Community Ministries run two sessions, so we have a morning and an afternoon, which tries to accommodate more folks' timing schedules. But something that's also a big barrier is meals, and we're very fortunate in the Rochester community that they are doing summer meals through Food Link and the Community Foundation. So many of our sites are offering kids those meals, so that that's one less thing that parents have to worry about at the end of the day.
Which in some cases they wouldn't be getting otherwise, right?
Right.
Connor, you want to?
Yeah, so let me just tell you a little bit about our programs. We're an association of 8 educational institutions, and we have 9 programs. They start, their full-day programs start at 8 o'clock and run through 3 o'clock, and then we have arrangements with some of the rec centers around town where kids can then go and make it more feasible for the adults to pick up kids at a time that works well. They are full day. They're focused very much on summer learning, as Duane, you were saying, with a lot of reading and mathematics, but worked into an experiential type of program with a lot of field trips. It's really the whole child we're interested in. These programs are tuition-free. They're focused on low-income families, folks who qualify for free and reduced lunch. And busing is provided from various locations around the city. And our educational institutions are the University of Rochester, MCC, which is where we're going to have this race on Saturday, Nazareth College, SUNY Geneseo, and SUNY Brockport, and 2 independent schools, the Harley School and the Allendale Columbia School, and Encompass Resource for Learning. So this summer we'll have about 1,000 kids in those programs.
How is this all funded?
This is all funded through major donations through philanthropic organizations. Also, the Rochester City School System puts in considerable funds because, as we were talking, if kids have the opportunity to stay even or gain a month or two of reading and math rather than losing 2 to 3 months, it's a huge win for everybody all the way around as they go back to September. So it's a consortium of funding mechanisms.
How much, you said you got about 1,000 kids involved in this. How does that compare to the need that's out there?
It's incremental, very small. If you look at the greater Rochester area, there are about 65,000 kids on free and reduced lunch in the 9-county area. So there is a huge need, Scott, for more opportunities in the summertime.
And this goes beyond just city limits, too, right?
It goes, yeah, right. If you look at where folks are across the whole county, it spreads across. There's a big concentration, of course, in the city center, but it's across our whole 9-county region, right.
Are you reaching out primarily within the city, or are you?
Well, we're across the board. 2 of our programs are at SUNY Geneseo. One's called Soaring Stars, which is for little guys from kindergarten through up through 8th grade, and that's at the BOCES Center in Mount Morris. It's great fun. You got to come. We have cows and pigs and the whole deal. And then another one at SUNY Geneseo is for called the Rochester Young Scholars Academy, is for middle and high school kids from the city of Rochester who go there for 2 weeks in a residential experience and live right there on the campus.
What a fantastic experience that must be.
Oh, yeah. The kids have a great time. They do all kinds of they have an archaeological site down there, and they're out really doing all kinds of fun things.
So the learning that they're getting spans the whole breadth of the educational experience?
Exactly. And it's all done in a way, we do a little test at the beginning, at the end, to see how kids are progressing. And other than that, it's all experiential. We have a 95% return rate year after year of the kids. And we have faculty come back at an 85% return rate. And they come from city, from suburban, from rural systems.
Are you coordinating any sort of curriculum materials with the schools, or is this something that's pretty much developed?
Yeah, we work very closely with the Rochester City School System, but each institution, if you go to these colleges and universities, they have these vast resources. So it's really amazing to watch when one of these programs gets started on a college campus.
Wow. It's Connections from member-supported public radio. We are talking about summer learning programs for kids. We are talking with Condor Gable from the Greater Rochester Summer Learning Association, Duane Mahoney from the Boys and Girls Clubs of Rochester, and Jennifer Muniga from Cameron Community Ministries. How do the ministries fit into this picture?
Well, we fit in very nicely, I think. We offer a lot of programs for kids. Mainly the city kids is where we come from, but we can have kids from anywhere. We offer 80 spots in the summertime, like I said before, in 2 different time settings throughout the day. But we offer the same as what Conger was talking about. There's a little bit of academics to prevent that slide, but the main focus is really on exposure and taking these kids to, on field trips to the museums, and to farms and to things that they've never been exposed to before, really increasing the chances that they're going to score higher on those New York State tests that assume they have that referential background. So that's very important. We're also doing a program this year, a new pilot program with a church out in West Bloomfield, which is really focusing on socioeconomic integration of the program. So 4 of our kids this summer are going to be going out and staying for 10 days with a family, a host family, very similar to the Fresh Air program in New York City. And we're so excited about it. It's going to be a great opportunity both for the suburb kids and our kids.
Oh, that's exciting. What sort of age ranges do you serve?
We serve kindergarten to 6th grade, so our kids are 5 to 12 years old.
Okay. Boys and Girls Club.
Well, we're a local affiliate of the Boys and Girls Clubs of America. The Boys and Girls Clubs nationwide, we have over 4,000 Boys and Girls Club clubhouses and over 4 million kids 6 to 18 years of age. Here locally, we're open now. We just expanded our hours. We're usually open from 11 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, depending on what the age range that we're talking about. But we, over the school year, opened up what's called a breakfast clubs for parents who, on days when kids are out of school and then summer, can bring kids as early as 8 o'clock. So that they can, you know, get to work. And the programs that we're focusing on during the summer are heavily STEM for kids, especially 6 to 12-year-olds. We normally operate an accelerated reading program, which is a literacy-based comprehension program during the school year. But the last 2 years, the United Way, who is one of the major funders for our accelerated reading program, has asked us to continue the program during the summer. So we do run AR, as we call it, Accelerated Reader, throughout the summer, where kids we test on every book read in the reading program. It's a reading comprehension program. We have at one site have read as many as 12,000 books in a school year, and they'll continue that over the summer. And for our teens, because we have so many national partnerships, our teens will do a lot of career exploration in addition to working for different places during the summer. So they'll do everything from visit Old Navy, The Gap, different stores that are national partners, to 2 weeks of culinary camp out in Canandaigua, and throughout the summer, we probably see about 160 to 180 kids a day at that particular site.
Wow. How has the mission changed over the years? I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of academic content in here now. That wasn't the original mission of the Boys and Girls Club, right?
No, but we've adopted years ago what was called a Project Learn philosophy. It was done out of Columbia University, and that was we should be a complement. Clubs nationwide should serve as a complement to the educational system. And so there's no reason why we can't make learning fun and different. It won't be school-based learning, but it can reinforce school-based learning in a fun way. So we picked the accelerated reader because kids like the competition of how many books they can read compared to somebody else in the Boys and Girls Club, and how well they can increase their reading level. And also, kids want to learn about different things, but in a way that is more adaptable to, you know, how they, you know, they're visual learners, and they, you know, they want to have career experience or work experience, not necessarily being paid for it, but they do want to know what you might do and how do they get to where they to accomplish the same goals that they may see you accomplish.
Should bring them in here and do a talk show one day.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That would be fun. 844-295-TALK is our phone number. We've got about 10 minutes left in this segment, so if you've got a question about some of these summer programs that you would like answered, right now would be the time to get that call in. On Twitter, at Scott Feibusch, you can reach me there as well. As we are talking about summer programs, throw it out to all of you. Are we really past the point, especially in an urban environment, where it makes sense to take a break from school still for 2.5, 3 straight months in the summer?
That's an interesting question. Clearly, it's our agrarian culture and society that got us to where we are. I think, as Duane was pointing out, the summer learning offers an opportunity to come at learning in an informal way, much more project-based, with field trips, all kinds of things. So in a way, it's very complementary, and that's what it's designed to be with the regular school year. So I personally would be a fan of continuing to build high-quality summer learning programs, which would give opportunities to low-income families to have those provided, if we can do it, through public funding and through private funding. As we lengthen the school day, that's a good thing, too. I know charter schools are doing more of that, but they still find, even over 6 to 8 weeks in the summer, that kids, if they don't have the opportunity to keep involved, slip slide away at the... So I think it's a mix.
Yeah, I think it depends on the child. I've had kids who go to extended learning day schools and like the fact that the school day is extended, and I have kids that probably would not necessarily work for. I think the summer is the same way. I think, you know, if the visual is a kid is absolutely going to do nothing during the summer, then I would say no. But, you know, kids want to experience different things, work, as well as, there's still summer learning, but I think the majority would want it to be done in a way that it's not necessarily extra school during the summer. It's a way to reinforce school day learning and still have fun with it.
I agree. I think with the dismal statistics that are out recently from the Community Foundation, it's very, very clear that these kids are losing skills throughout the summer, and it's our job to make sure that we are decreasing that achievement gap that's really happening between the low income and the other students.
Are you able to point to results? Are there numbers after doing this for a while that you can point to and say this is having a concrete effect?
Yeah, we've been working on this. Well, we're part of a national organization that's been working on this for 50 years. Here in Rochester, we've had one program going for 20 years. What we find, Scott, is that if kids come back year after year, which is our real intent, like at the Horizons at Harley program, one of our programs, the kids come back on average 4, 5, 6 years. We find that rather than losing 1 to 3 months of reading and math each summer, the kids hold even or gain a month or two. And if kids attend the program for 3 years, we find that 90% of those kids graduate from high school on time and 75% go on to college. And these, to point out, are kids who are coming in behind the power curve, because what we are doing is reaching out for kids who are already slip-sliding away and trying to get them engaged summer after summer.
Are there lessons in this that can come back into the rest of the school year to improve that experience for kids?
That's one of the things I was going to bring up. What we find is that the teachers come back year after year after year, and what they say is it's an opportunity to get engaged in experiential learning and to do things in the summer which they feel free to do. They get really enthusiastic about it, and then from that learning, they bring that back to the school system and during the regular year. So it works for the teachers as well as for the kids.
And Jennifer, you'd mentioned the field trips. And, of course, that's something that's kind of vanishing from all students' experiences, regardless of where they are. Yeah. So this really, I think, it sounds like it's an opportunity to get some of those things that just there's not room in the curriculum during the school year for anymore.
Absolutely. That's the goal. And like I mentioned, on all of the testing, those are questions that are assumed that kids have had those experiences and they just haven't. So we've got to get back to that.
Absolutely. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 is our phone number. Bonnie in Rochester, you're on with Connections.
Hi, I was just calling to find out how you find out more information about this program. It sounds very interesting.
Which of the programs were you interested in finding out more
about? There's the Boys and Girls Club that you were talking about.
Okay.
Well, for the Boys and Girls Club, it would be just to call 585-328-3077. Extension 103. And the beauty of a Boys and Girls Club is that the membership at this point is $50, and the $50 allows your son or daughter to be a member for the entire year. The Breakfast Club, which would start at 8 o'clock, is actually an additional $7 per day. But we think it's a minimal expense to allow for an extra 2 or 3 hours for a parent to get to work on time. We encourage people to come in and take a tour, see all the different programming first. We even offer kids the opportunity to have a week's pass for free so they can experience the club for a week, see if they like it. There's tons of, you know, kids there. We have kids that are and alumni, you know, a fair number of alumni that are, you know, that people would recognize, and you know, from Roland Williams to You know, Denzel Washington's a national spokesperson. So we have, you know, a fair number of kids that are from diverse backgrounds that I think that, you know, would be a wonderful opportunity at a low cost for parents who can't necessarily afford a place for the kids to go during the summer.
Is there assistance available if even that $50 is an obstacle for families?
Yes, actually, it had parents signed up prior to June 1st. The actual membership is $11 a year, but after June 1st until the end, until September, it's $50 for the year, which we still think is. But yes, we have waivers for kids, and we have for those parents that can't afford it, there are scholarship funds.
Yes, 328-3077, extension 103. There are spaces still available. Who still has space available to be able to accommodate kids at this point? It's getting pretty late into the...
Cameron has spaces still available. Our deadline is actually the 26th of June, and our program is free. So anybody who's interested can call Cameron Community Ministries or stop by. The number is 254-2697, and we take kids K through 6.
And where are you located?
We're at 48 Cameron Street, which is right off of Lyle Ave in the northwest part of the city.
You're shaking your head.
Well, there may be a couple, Scott. This time of year, we really work hard with the families, as I mentioned, year over year. So we actually do most of the getting folks enrolled in January through March timeframe. But I would encourage folks to go to our website, which is www.summerleap.com. And there they can find links to all of the programs and contact information if folks would like to, you know, learn more about it and begin to get in the pipeline.
Excellent.
Boys and Girls Clubs kids can sign up along with their parent. They have to sign up with a parent for membership year-round, including the summer. The only requirement, and that's been over the last 10 years, is that we do encourage or make it mandatory that kids 13 and under have to be enrolled in the accelerated reading program. But, you know, as they'll find out, it's a real fun program to be involved in. All the other services are optional. Everything from, you know, basketball leagues to, as I said, STEM, homework assistance, career exploration. But we take kids year-round.
Okay. One final question in this segment here on Connections. What more resources would you like to have available? If somebody said to you, came to you and said, hey, we'd like to fund X, what would it be?
For us, I think it would be space as well as transportation. We're always trying to go on field trips, and you know, getting a bus every time is pretty expensive, and so we always are looking for extra funding for transportation.
We're systematically approaching all 19 colleges and universities in the area to see if they might also join in, and we've started talking actually with the suburban school systems to see if we might begin to build programs like this in the suburban schools during the summer. So that would require a lot of sites, and then, as you might imagine, there'd be considerable funding we'd have to raise to make all that happen. But that's what we're working on.
Does the extra emphasis that we've seen lately in the headlines on expanding urban suburban during the school year, does that help that?
Yes, exactly. And the whole effort on the Rochester Monroe anti-poverty effort and Rock the Future, all of us have been looking at summer learning as a very important piece of the total equation.
For us, it's volunteers. I mean, we thrive on volunteers, and also through volunteers, we also like to link our kids with people in the community from all different walks of life, from people that are living in the city or local or people from the suburbs. It really doesn't matter. Our kids are more, they want people around them that care about what they're interested in, and doesn't matter to them where they're from. So volunteers and mentorship is probably the most critical things that we focus on.
Excellent. Thank you all so much for being in. The summer run takes place on Saturday at MCC?
On Saturday, right at, it starts at 8:30. It'd be there at 8. We're going to have a wellness fair right after the walk and run, so everybody's invited.
Super. Condor Gable, the CEO of Greater Rochester Summer Learning Association, and Jennifer Muniga from Cameron Community Ministries, Dwayne Mahoney, the Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Club of Rochester. Thanks so much for being with us. Coming up on Connections, we are going to be talking about the Street Light Festival, a new addition to our summer festival calendar. Coming up in just a moment here, a member-supported public radio, AM 1370, FM 88.5 in Rochester, 89.5 in the Finger Lakes, WXXI.org online, and on the WXXI mobile app. Stay with us. Up next on Connections, it's Healthy Friday. I'm Scott Feibusch in for Evan Dawson. In our first hour Friday, what's keeping you up at night? Insomnia is a problem many of us face. And that tossing and turning all night long can cause big problems by day, too. We'll hear about the latest solutions and treatments. Then in our second hour, Elisa Orlando has a preview of the new season of WXXI-TV's Second Opinion. Healthy Friday, coming up on the next Connections. It's Connections on member-supported public radio. I'm Scott Feibusch, in for Evan Dawson. And amidst the huge calendar of summer festivals that we have here in Rochester, everything from the Lilac Festival, Maplewood Festival, the Jazz Festival that's getting underway tomorrow, as a matter of fact, we were talking about that earlier this week. And there's a new edition coming up that starts tomorrow night, part of the Rochester Year of Light, or Rock the Yol, if you, pronounce it Yol or Y-O-L?
Y-O-L.
Y-O-L, okay. We are joined by Rachel DeGuzman, President and CEO of 21st Century Arts and Executive Producer, and Margo Muto from Rock the Y-O-L. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you, Scott.
Good
Thank
to have you. You on Connections. So the big thing that is coming up that is starting Friday night that we've never done here in Rochester before is the Streetlight Festival.
It starts in July 17th.
July 17th. I'm off by a month. How about that?
Yes, it's
Mark
17th
your calendars
and 18th.
Now. Okay, July 17th and 18th. There we go. What are we looking forward to? What's coming up here?
So the Streetlight Festival is a community-based festival that will celebrate the Year of Light. The United Nations declared 2015 the Year of Light and light-based technology, Rochester being an optics and photonics capital of the country, and strong in arts and culture, it seemed the natural to start something like this here. And what people will experience is an interactive, curated space in Village Gate, Anderson Alley, and on a section of Anderson Avenue that's being closed off for the festival. And they will be able to, at 10 p.m., come through and have a wondrous and amazing experience with light-based art and other spectacles.
If you've never experienced light-based art before, what is it that you're going to be in for?
Well, we're going to see a huge cross-section of things. It's very multidisciplinary, so we will have projections on buildings, on the pavement possibly. We have installations that are more sculptural. We have some projects that are also including sound. We have interactive, audience interactive installations that actually respond to movement as people move through the space. Those are just a few. It's really been open to all and any idea, where light really is the major creative component.
This has been done in other cities before like this?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And in this city. We actually, through our research, we knew we did not have a current light festival, but 100 years ago, Claude Bragdon, who's a major architect
sure.
here, he launched a sound and light festival. The first one was in New York City, but then the second one was in Rochester, and it was called Sound and Light. And he used ornamental light design and sound to start a festival. The first one had 60,000 people in New York City. So we
wow.
did have a light festival. And
100
we're bringing,
years ago.
100 years ago in 1915. And so we actually decided to name the jury prize for the top award, the Claude Bragdon Award, after that history that we have in Rochester with light festivals.
I want to talk technology a little bit, because obviously there's all sorts of technology that you can use now that he wouldn't have had 100 years ago to play with. You didn't have lasers to work with. You weren't able to do motion sensing. You didn't have computer control of anything. What were they doing back then?
Well, it was ornamental light and design, so I'm not really that clear on what they were doing. But you're right, the technology that exists now makes it a 21st century light festival, so that will be different. But we have some of the best designers in the country coming out of places like RIT. And so we are giving them a chance to exhibit in such a way. The one thing that I will say about light, it appeals to us as human beings the same way that fireworks do. So this is something that's a part of being human. We're just connecting it to technology now and really reimagining that whole communal experience.
Was this forgotten about for a while? I mean, you do think back, and you think about the expositions in the 1890s, and early 1900s when that was a big deal, just to put lights on a building and light up the outline of a building. And then it seems even architecturally that people sort of got away from that for a big chunk of the 20th century. What's bringing it back in now?
Well, specifically this year, like Rachel said, it is the 2015 International Year of Light. So that has sparked the interest and awareness worldwide. But I will say, coming from the arts perspective, that in the past 5 years or so, when you look around not only our country but the world, there are these light festivals and new media festivals that are popping up. I think a huge thing that has to do with that is the issue around sustainability and technology. And light has been a huge point of conversation with that as we transition into new technologies in our everyday living. So naturally, artists respond to those things, creators respond to those things, designers, and their projects are starting to move in that way as well.
How far back can you trace anything like an artist like Bruce Nauman and what he was doing in the 70s with light? Take me back historically. Where are the antecedents to what we're going to see coming up in July at the festival here?
Yeah, well, Bruce Nauman is a good example. Somebody else who's still working today, James Turrell, has been a huge influence in the contemporary art world, and he specifically uses light in creating environment. There's many artists through the 60s and 70s up until now that have been experimenting with media's lights and sounds and more interactive experiences. But we're seeing it more and more today. Like I said, just our technology on an everyday basis is making these things more accessible. And we see when you look into art programming in the higher education that they're opening up departments that deal specifically with new media.
And one of the things that's very exciting about this festival is there is this whole historical track record of light being used in art. But we have Lauren Covington, who's coming from Skinny Atlas, and he's debuting a piece that's never been seen before with a technique that's never been seen before here in Rochester for our festival. So I think it's certainly celebrating the past of light and celebrating light art that's been here before, but also inspiring innovation in light and in a city like Rochester where we're so strong in optics.
Can we talk about that new technique, or is it going to be a surprise?
Well, I can give you an outline of what it is.
Please.
In fact, when he first proposed it to us, he said that this is what I'd like to do, but I'm not sure if it'll work. I'm going to be experimenting with it next week, and I'll let you know. But he's bringing huge inflatables that you'll see in Anderson Alley and in the parking lot next to Good Luck. And so you're talking 12 feet. These are inflatables, and they have projections in them that will respond.
12 feet tall?
12 feet tall as you walk through this interactive installation. And this has never been done before exactly the way that he's doing it. He's a very excited person. He has exhibited all over the world at major festivals. He's one of the reasons why he's premiering this here is he's so excited to have someplace close to home in the region to exhibit his work because people here don't know him as well as they do all over the world.
That's fascinating. We are talking about the International Year of Light, about Rock the YOL, and about the Streetlight Festival, which is coming up in July over at Village Gate and Anderson Alley, and which we're excited about a month ahead of time already. Hopefully you'll get a chance to go to it, too. Admission to this will be free?
It's free. It's free to exhibitors, and it's free to people attending. We really wanted this to be as accessible as possible to the community in Rochester and to people who are visiting here.
We want to be accessible to you, too. If you have questions, give us a call at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. I'm on Twitter, at Scott Feibusch. Happy to hear from you that way as well. What are some of, in addition to the festival, which is obviously the big deal here, what else are you doing during the course of the Year of Light? What else can people look forward to?
Well, Rock the YOL is a campaign to actually elevate the Year of Light in Rochester and celebrate some of the things that are happening around town. I know that the Rochester Museum and Science Center has embraced the Year of Light with a lot of their projects and their exhibitions. So those are some of the things. I know that there's something coming up after the Jazz Festival at Rochester Contemporary Art with an artist, I think it's called Cube. So the Rock the YOL campaign is really a service to the community to aggregate all these. So if people go to rocktheyol.com, there's an events page that people can submit any event that's related to light for the Year of the Light, and it will be published there, and people can attend.
Are you still taking submissions for the festival?
Yes, we are. Our submission deadline is actually July 1st, but we are still taking submissions, and we are accepting them not just from artists, but really from anybody that feels that they have a strong idea that creatively utilizes light and feels they can produce something. We've opened it up to engineers, technicians, scientists, makers, really any creative. We've approached schools. We are encouraging people to submit as an individual or as a team. One of the interesting things about Lauren Covington, who Rachel just spoke about, our sponsor artist, this light art, interactive art, is something recent for him in his lifetime. He actually was a software developer out in Silicon Valley, and was responsible for starting one of the first maker spaces out in that area. And as he was transitioning through his career, he really felt he needed more of a creative outlet and transitioned into this work. So I love that story. I'm really encouraging people to not be intimidated by it or feel like, oh, I'm not an artist, I can't do this. And we've been getting submissions in from a very diverse spectrum.
And from all over the world.
Yeah.
We have inquiries from Netherlands, New Zealand, San Francisco. Our first submission was from Colorado. So we're celebrating art that's local, but also from other places.
Mm-hmm. So you're providing them with space and power. You're telling them build something that can last for a couple of days at least. And that's it for the guidelines, basically?
Pretty much.
Well, it is a curated
yes.
space. So we do have standards that we hope people will make, but we had the makers, the mini maker fair here, submit for these throwies, which are like big dot candies. And so there'll be a wall where people can make these LED lights and throw them on the wall and create communal art. So that's not high art, but it does fall within the scope of the artistic vision for this festival.
What are some of the tools that are available to artists who want to work in this medium now? What are they working with?
Well, you know, that's very specific to the type of projects they do. Like I said, when we have submissions with people that are dealing with projection, film is a very big component to that. We have a VJ coming in, so sound technologies and the projection are working together in that way. And then for the more sculptural elements, you are not dealing just with the light technology, but with the specific craft of whatever other material is in there. So it's very specific to the projects. Again, that's one of the exciting things about this festival, is it starts exposing us to the different technologies and processes that people are using today that even I'm not aware of.
So you're hoping to find some new stuff to
absolutely
broaden your mind in this too.
Absolutely.
What are some of the local resources if people are hearing this and are thinking, gee, this sounds like something I'd like to experiment with? What are some of the resources that people can go to learn more about this here in Rochester?
I think they can go online and start looking at what some people are doing at other festivals. We don't have one in Rochester, but certainly there are really great festivals in New York City, in Toronto, in New Zealand, in Singapore. So there are many festivals around the country. And frankly, when we were exploring doing this, that's one of the things that we did. We started looking around. And even though this was something we were more familiar with than maybe some people are, it's just you sit there and you're just awestruck with what you see. And some of the things are much more complicated, but others are very simple, and they're beautiful in their simplicity. And as if you can imagine being outside at 10 o'clock at night and seeing something that may appear ordinary in the bright light, but is exposed to something even more beautiful when you're looking at it in the dark. And I think that we're going to see a lot of that.
On a nice warm summer night.
Absolutely. And hopefully not raining.
Hopefully. You never know in this town. You just never know. And it's going to start at 10 o'clock each night, right?
Yes, it'll go through 1 a.m. One of the things that we're doing, we've had conversations with area museums where they would stay open later. And perhaps, you know, because the Village Gate is within walking distance of many of our museums, we hope to partner with many of the museums. We hope to partner with many of the restaurants in Village Gate so that they will have specials. We've already started those conversations. So you might have a streetlight specials in some of those restaurants. We decided this year to very focus on what we're presenting and not complicate it with a lot of vendors. So we won't have food trucks. We will be relying on the businesses that exist within Village Gate and the neighborhood of the arts. So we also think we'll bring them a little economic shot in the arm for the July 17th and the 18th.
Somebody needs to come up with bioluminescent food to be serving during this.
That was one of my thoughts. I've been in our conversations. I keep throwing out the idea of a glow-in-the-dark drink. I think it would be really exciting.
That would be interesting.
We had meetings yesterday, and that was on the agenda. In every meeting, Margo was asking people,
Is it possible? Can you do this?
There's got to be some kind of hyper-chartreuse that you can pour into something.
I would think so. I feel like I've seen that in my experience traveling out to different clubs.
If you've seen something illuminated that you want to talk about, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. On Twitter, at Scott Feibusch, we want to hear from you, too, especially if you are excited about going out to this festival, as I am. What are you expecting? It's kind of late at night for kids to be out there. Will there be... What sort of age group are you looking forward to having there?
There are 4,000 people that are having conversations on Facebook about this, and they're bringing their children. I think we will see, just like you see them at the fireworks, I think people will. It's a special occasion, and there's no content in this festival that is not appropriate to children, and I think they're as amazed by light as anyone is.
If not more so.
Absolutely. But one of the things that we've been really thrilled about is just the way that this has taken off. The Democrat and Chronicle did a story on this a couple days ago, and it was we had so many likes on Facebook. It was really crazy. But everywhere we went yesterday talking to people, from meetings to we went to the Carlton Co-Work last night. They had a TED X Flower City meeting. And everybody's talking about the festival. It was just very gratifying. We think a lot of people are excited to see something new that's going to be very inclusive and that inspires us.
It's a fantastic idea for a festival. Margo, you were talking earlier about doing projections. And the first thing I think of when I think of projection art right now is that political context. We saw it during the Occupy movement, when people were taking these projectors that, again, didn't exist a few years ago and doing computer projections on the sides of buildings in Manhattan. What else are people doing with projections? Is that a big part of that piece of the movement?
That certainly in the industry of the arts, yes, it is. Like I said, we're still getting submissions in. We haven't completely looked through all of them yet. So I personally am hoping to see projects of that context coming through. I think it's a perfect opportunity to reach the masses and to create a message, get your message out there if you do have that political or social context to it.
I would love to see a resurrection of the light show right back behind us in High Falls here.
Yeah.
It was a little cheesy at times, but it was always something
to look forward
to. Oh, the
laser shows, those are great.
Yeah. Yeah, is there any possibility? What do you look forward to? Is this going to move forward beyond 2015? Is there going to be a 2016 event too?
We are definitely moving forward with that incentive that we hope to see that happen. Definitely growing its footprint, building partnerships, and again, having accessibility to more artists worldwide to come in.
And we're building this with a lot of partners. So it's being launched this year as a grassroots initiative, but with year two being a more established festival, we do plan this as an ongoing event. And all the feedback that we've gotten from everybody that we've talked to has been that they think it should be an ongoing event, but the number of partnerships and people that have come to the table to help us get this off the ground has been pretty amazing.
Absolutely.
Would you grow it, especially something like projections, would you grow it beyond Anderson Alley and Village Gate and use more of the landscape of the city at some point?
I think if we were definitely getting in those submissions that required that space to do so, absolutely. I would rather, like I said, grow the geographical footprint than to cut back on what we show just to fit within a tiny frame.
And this is an interesting kind of festival. We were talking about storage. Because a lot of it is projections and inflatable, it's not, it doesn't have the same, you can then deflate it and put it away for the night. Or you take your projector, you put it away. So the capacity to grow it really just has to do with more buildings and more asphalt. And I think that that's something we have a lot of in Rochester. So we could absolutely potentially extend it beyond the footprint we have now.
Well, the idea that you can affect something that's as big, I'm looking out the window here at the Kodak building. You could go up on the roof here on State Street, name a projector there.
Absolutely.
And all of a sudden, you're doing something with that enormous building that requires one little projector and a power outlet.
That's right. That's right. And one thing, you know, I'd like to say and to note specifically that this festival really creates a platform for not just our local artists and people who are in technological fields to come out and show their work to the masses in a way that we might not actually ever have access to, because there aren't a lot of venues that really can support the infrastructure for what it takes to exhibit these types of projects. So it takes their work outside of the traditional way we see things in galleries, museums, institutions, in their businesses, and brings it on a more accessible platform for everybody.
Fascinating. Who should we know locally? Who are some of the names that are involved in this right now here that we can expect to see at the festival?
Well, I don't know if we're totally prepared to completely lay out the exhibitors, as we're still taking in submissions. We want to be fair on that, but we are getting a lot of local submissions in, which is making me very excited. I'm glad to see names that I have never heard of before, and to see people, again, whose work I've just haven't seen a lot of in this area that are coming forward.
And without naming specifics, we can say that there are a couple of major dance companies who have provided submissions here, so we'll see them in a different context in the Light Festival, which is pretty exciting. And these are people, dance companies that people know. Margo mentioned a VJ, so expect to see projections on buildings. Expect to see art installations that are bigger than any of our current facilities can hold, so that'll be pretty exciting. And expect to see makers doing things that we certainly, you know, the Rochester Museum of Science Center wants to be involved. So you could see things that you see there in a different context. So, and most importantly, you're going to see things that you've never seen before in ways you've never seen them before. And we have one artist that we're really desperately trying to get, make it work out. And she's got an exhibit that is all over the world. And it's going to be an experience that people have never had before in Rochester.
How do you, from an artist's perspective, if you're an artist who's making some of these things, how do you survive? I mean, this is a difficult thing sometimes to sell. You know, you can't just sell it the way you would a sculpture or a painting necessarily. How does that work?
It's complicated. It really depends on the different kinds of venues you get into, but that's one of the important things for me being involved, owning an art gallery here in Rochester in the neighborhood of the arts, and working with artists that are coming out working in these ways. It really is about participating in events like this, and these types of things are funded through communities, institutions, and partnerships. So it's about building those collaborations and getting people invested and excited and creating the experience. We're not necessarily investing in an object that we take home with us, but we're investing in experience and awareness and sharing of knowledge that you really can't get without everybody getting on board.
Yeah, I mean, the thing obviously is not like a Park Avenue or a clothesline. We're expecting to come home with something
exactly
that you've bought there, but how do the artists make a go of it?
Many of the artists that we are getting submissions through, they are being funded through other sources. They do this on a regular basis, and they have built their credibility in that way. Some people just fund it themselves and hope when they enter things like this that they win the award, they win the cash prize, or they get scholarships, and it builds recognition. Absolutely adding it on a CV, if you're trying to take a very serious professional direction with this, really helps when you start wanting to be placed in institutions to build your credibility and your experience.
And we're going to, we have an Indiegogo campaign. We went to the community to ask them to help fund us. But one thing that I think we are looking to have as an outcome of this festival is to create a bigger market for these artists'
Absolutely.
Work. So until people are very aware of what they're doing, it's hard for them to then say, let's support their work. I think this is an introduction for many people that people are doing work like this in Rochester.
And I will say that it's not that collectors don't come in and collect these kinds of projects, because they do. It's a niche of collecting, and it's very possible, and it does happen.
It's those people who are willing to spend a lot to own something intangible.
That's right.
In some cases.
It's the idea and the process that's the important to them.
We had a question that came in off the air. Any concerns for people who have epilepsy or seizures? Is there going to be any strobe lights there that could cause any issues?
There is one project that potentially does have that, and there will be the warning for it, so people are aware before they enter into that space.
Okay. And again, the dates on this, we want to make sure we get it right. It's July 17th and 18th?
July 17th and 18th, Village Gate, from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. both nights.
Excellent. And free to the public. There's parking there. Come on down.
Absolutely.
Excellent. I'm certainly looking forward to it. I'm going to bring my 7-year-old, and he's probably going to be up all night with a flashlight after that, trying to do light projects in his
That's
bedroom.
That's what we hope.
All right. Thank you so much, Margo Mudo and Rachel DeGuzman, from the Streetlight Festival taking place in July. I'm Scott Feibusch. You've been listening to Connections from member-supported public radio. Healthy Friday coming your way tomorrow. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.